The thought of it made him chuckle. No could understand how his men with so much money, how men with so much money could whine so much. Thankfully, he had his ways not to listen. He looked over to Rosenthal to see if he realized that he was no longer listening to him. Sure enough, Rosenthal stopped talking when he could no longer hear his voice vibrating in his ears. And it wasn't too long after that when Rosenthal realized he could not hear anything at all. Even though Nick couldn't hear Rosenthal, he still seemed pretty upset. Nick was never trained to read lips, but it appeared that his partner was trying to mouth the words. Oh, that is very funny. Nick tossed Rosenthal the device he was using to cancel out the sound in a 100-yard radius. The device was the size of a six-sided gambling dice. A six-sided gambling die, I think. With dark blue and charcoal gray sides. Rosenthal was looking for some kind of switch on the dice to turn the damn thing on the... To turn the damn thing off, and he found only smooth sides. Looking over to Nick for help, Nick motioned his thumb and fingers together to give Rosenthal an idea how the device was operated. Rosenthal squeezed the device, and it flashed once, like a strobe of light, and the sound was restored. Then the door to Rosenthal's office burst open and popped in the receptionist.
Mr. Rosenthal? Mr. Clegg? What just happened?
Everything's fine, Miss Schumacher. Mr. Clegg was just having his say.
Yes, sir,
the receptionist said, catching her breath, just before she walked out and closing the door behind her. I see you've made it a great deal smaller, Rosenthal said, examining the cube closely. And it's just as powerful. But isn't there anything else? Rosenthal said. Don't play games with me, Nick. I agree. That would give you something today, and there you have it, Nick said. I told you what I want. I want some credit for my work. I'm not some cog in a machine. I don't like how the company holds on to all the patents. Let me broker a deal. Bring me your next invention, and I'll make them listen, Rosenthal said, studying the cube Nick tossed him in silent wonder. This sound nullifier should help convince them. I'll take you up on your word, partner, Nick said, before departing from Rosenthal's office. So what did the big man have to say? Allison asked when Nick met up with her. She was sitting at a table in the Angelic, a local French bistro near the penthouse at apartment 7 at Washington. She had already ordered herself an iced tea and a bowl of French onion soup. Allison considered herself a connoisseur of soups and would usually order the soup over the salad. Whenever Nick ordered the house salad, Allison would go into a spiel about how the house salad typically was made up of everything in the walk-in refrigerator the restaurant was about to throw away, and unlike the soup, the salad was never cooked, and there was no telling what was growing in it. Nick always told her that he preferred the salad, and that he liked to live dangerously, and Allison would always reply that it was bound to catch up with him. I don't trust the man, Nick said, taking the adjoining seat at the table that was set for two. That's nothing new, Allison chided, taking a spoonful of her soup. No, Nick conceded, but there's no telling what harm this next device could do. More harm than that force thingy you invented, Allison asked. The force shield? Nick said. What harm could be done in protecting people? Besides, Rosenthal promised that it would only be used for commercial applications. And you believed him? Nearly choking up on her soup. He signed an agreement. Hell spells an agreement, protested Allison. If anything, Rosenthal's been a man of his word. Well, mostly. He didn't know me when Rosenthal discovered me. I was at a very low point in my life. There was no way of knowing where I could have ended up without Rosenthal. Is that why you stay with him? Allison asked. You would have landed on your feet. You're brilliant, Nick. Go on, Nick said with a self-assured grin. I'm serious, Allison said with a laugh. I know you are, and that's what scares me at times, Nick said, sobering up. What happens when I get the genie out of the bottle?
More like Pandora's box, you mean?
You're right, Nick acknowledged. But I'm like a heroin addict. Once I invent something, I can't stop. I suppose I'm a prankster at heart. I just love to play games with my sisters. You should have seen me with the whoopee cushion. Times where I could have been satisfied with a funny noise. Now you're more sophisticated, Allison joked. You can say that, Nick said, getting the waiter's attention while he reached up into his sports jacket and pulled out a headband and crowned it on his head.
What are you doing, Nick? Allison said.
Just a little test.
Oh, don't make a scene, Allison protested.
Did you want to order something, sir? The waiter asked primally when he reached their table With a small black notebook in hand, he stood at attention, ready to take Nick's order like he had done a dozen times that afternoon. "Don't you have a hard cider on tap here?" Nick asked. "Indeed we do, sir," the waiter pleasantly told him. "Crispin cider. I'll have a bottle of that." "Very good, sir. And what else?" Then, just as the waiter was about to make a note of the drink order, the pen and notebook inexorably dropped out of his hands and fell into the porcelain tile floor. Fell to the porcelain tile floor with a thud and a rattle. "Oops," the waiter said, reaching down for his pen and notebook. "I'll also have a house salad," Nick said. "House salad," the waiter said, and he wrote it down. "And is there..." Again, the waiter dropped his pen and notebook like they're made of water. "Call me Mr. Clumsy today," the waiter said. "My girlfriend claims the house salad has the worst things in it," Nick said with a playful grin. "Do you disagree?" "I can assure you the guard chef takes her job very seriously and uses the best ingredients," the waiter said. "What's in the house salad today?" Nick asked. "Snails," the waiter said, as he didn't believe what he was saying.
"Snails?"
Allison said. "Ah, you won't find me eating that." "This is a French bistro, after all," Nick explained.
"Did I say snails? I meant to say nails."
"Nails? What are you talking about?"
"Yes, nails," the waiter proclaimed. "Very hard ones. Little rocks and succulent earthworms, black beetles and puppy dog tails."
"Now I know you're putting me on," Allison said.
"Not at all," the waiter said.
"That sounds great to me." "Would you want something else, sir?" the waiter asked.
"Nothing else for me," Nick said, taking the headband off of his head and placing it back into his sports jacket. The waiter turned away and left shaking his head like he had a screw loosed.
"Did you do that?"
"Do what?"
"That."
"I'm just simply a man with a few dollars in his bank account. I don't have the power to make people do whatever I want. I'm not a god, Allison."
"More like a little devil," Allison reasoned. "Now I can see why you're so reluctant to give this over to Rosenthal.
Right now, I only trust myself with it, and I don't trust myself... I only trust myself with it, and I don't trust myself with it."
"That's reassuring," Allison said.
"Are you certain it's safe to use on people?"
"It's perfectly fine as long as you don't direct people over rooftops or into oncoming traffic," Nick said.
"Why would you create such a device?" Allison said.
"There seems no good that can come from it."
"Because it's fun," Nick said.
"Besides, I believe it can be used to restore nerve damage, and it might be able to make a quadriplegic walk again."
"No," Allison gushed.
"It's possible," Nick explained. "But whatever good it can do, I know it can do just as much bad."
"So what are you going to do?" Allison asked.
"Bananas," Nick said.
"Bananas?" Allison said, completely puzzled.
"After lunch here, I'm going to the market for some bananas. I think better after I make myself a smoothie," Nick said. Nick thought that the market was just the place to test his device again, and he could do it while he got the ingredients for his smoothie. Placing the headband on his head again and walking to the market, he picked up a basket in one hand and crossed over to the produce section of the market for some bananas, strawberries, blueberries, blackberries, and a good-sized pineapple. Now, where was the peanut butter? Nick always forgot where this market kept its peanut butter, so he circled around to the front of the market to ask one of the clerks at the cash register. A large, muscular man in his late 20s was steaming down an aisle of the market. In the very front of the store, crossing past people waiting in line at the open checkout stations. He was wearing all black. Black shoes, black socks, black slacks, and a black shirt.
"Isn't it a little early to be walking around, Dracula?"
"What was that?" the man in black asked, stopping in his tracks. He addressed the person who made the remark, who happened to be a man that stood a foot shorter than him in a gray business suit.
"Are you talking to me?" the man in the business suit asked.
"Is there something wrong with what I'm wearing?" the man in the black asked.
"Black looks good on you," the man in the business suit said.
"You better watch what you say, or that mouth of yours is going to get you in a lot of trouble," the man in black warned.
"But I didn't say anything."
"Right," the man in black said, still a little flushed with anger.
That was close, Nick thought. He would have to intervene. He didn't account for that guy in the black would be such a hothead. Nick didn't realize how quickly his invention could turn dangerous. Maybe he really was playing with fire here. If he redesigned the device and removed the mind control aspects, it would still be a viable invention in its own right, and then he wouldn't have any reservations in handing it over to Rosenthal. Rosenthal could still make hundreds of millions on the medical functions of the device, and he would be no wiser to the darker side of its possibilities. A clerk with light blonde hair came down to his shoulders, or her red blouse, got done checking out all of her customers, and Nick used the device one more time to get her attention. She turned like she had eyes in the back of her head.
"Can I help you, sir?" she asked.
"I'm looking for the peanut butter," Nick said.
"Aisle 9,
the clerk informed him.
"Thanks,"
Nick said, before he went searching for the peanut butter. Once he got home to make his smoothie, he would spend the rest of the day pre-programming the device. No one can have this device in its current reconfiguration. Once Nick got home, he started right away making his smoothie. He sliced the pineapple into chunk-sized pieces into his deluxe blender that he bought at a specialty store. Then he added the berries and peanut butter and some orange juice, the apple juice and a splash of pineapple juice with a handful of crushed ice. Allison was in the other room, watching a cable news station. She was watching intently and didn't notice him putting his smoothie together until he activated the blender. The noise caused her to dash into the fashionable kitchen that they remodeled just last year. "Nick, did you hear the news?" Allison asked, once he switched off the blender.
"What news?"
"About Jackson Castle," Allison said. "He just said the most damning thing, and it has already gone viral all over the social networks." Jackson Castle was the Republican nominee who as of recently was ticking up in the polls after the president healthcare program had been such a disaster. Democrats across the nation have been bailing on Warren Care, like rats on a sinking ship in fear of the upcoming elections. The chances of President Michael Warren getting reelected were dim at best, and Democrats running for political office didn't want any associations of him in fear that it would be damaging to their campaigns. Nick was a supporter of the president and thought those Democratic politicians were spineless. Any new government program was going to have some speed bumps during its implementation. He was a diehard Democrat and wouldn't vote for Jackson Castle on a bet. "This should be good," Nick said. "What did Castle do now?" "He told some man at a rally that he wanted to have sex with his wife," Allison said.
"He did what?"
Nick asked, pouring himself his smoothie into a tall glass. "I find that hard to believe," Allison called out. "Kitchen screen." And the kitchen's holographic projector materialized as a screen out of thin air that panned the length of the room. "Play Jackson Castle comment at rally today in its entirety." Instantaneously, the screen played back the rally. The Republican nominee was shown stepping down from his podium and shaking hands with the audience that pooled to meet him. Out of the crowd, a young man offered his support to Jackson Castle and introduced him to his wife. Upon seeing the supporter's wife, a tall brunette woman in her 20s, the Republican nominee remarked that he would sure like to pork her. The man was not sure what he was hearing, so Castle said that his wife was a knockout and that he wanted to know what the man wanted in order that he may have sex with her. It looked as though the man tried to laugh it off, but he appeared confused and a little upset. Meanwhile, the image cut back to the studio. Hosting the program is Emily Gertz, and she has been a recent addition to the Global News Network. This is the first time Nick has ever seen her at a loss for words. Her guest is a Democratic commentator. Emily Gertz turns to him for his reaction. The commentator explained that he always thought that Castle was an unpolished speaker, but he had no idea that he could be this uncouth. The Gertz asked the Democratic commentator if he thinks that Castle was joking. The commentator concludes that, joke or no joke, the Republican nominee is going to take a hit in the polls. Allison paused the video. "It looks as though Castle was forced into saying that." "By my device?" Nick asked with a smile. "The problem is the headband is right here," patting his hand over the pocket in his jacket where he stored his invention. "Is that the only one you made?" Allison asked.
"Well,
there are prototypes," Nick ventured, "but they're locked up in my lab, and the only one who knows about the device is you and I. The only one who knows about the device is you, and I just showed you the device today." Now he was getting worried. "Kitchen screen," he called out. "Replay the Jackson Castle rally." "What are you looking for?" Allison asked. If anyone is using my device, they'll be in proximity of Castle, and that woman that Castle said he wanted to have sex with. How close would they have to be? Allison asked. "Close. The prototypes didn't have much range," Nick explained. "If someone was using my prototypes, we should see him in the video." "Still frame," Allison ordered the screen. "Do you see something?" Nick asked. "Enhance lower right," Allison said, and the kitchen screen took that portion of this image and increased that section until it filled the entire screen. "Isn't that one of your prototypes?" pointing to a man just a few yards away from Castle. "Zoom in and enhance." She ordered the screen. "That's not possible," escaped Nick's lips. "To win an election? I've read the cost of running this year has gone up to $6 billion, Allison said. "Well, Castle's a buffoon anyway," Nick said. "It shouldn't cost $6 billion to defeat him." "So you had nothing to do with this, Nick?" Allison asked. "Me?" Nick said, taken back by her question. "I might be a trickster, but stealing elections isn't in my playbook." "What are you going to do?" Allison asked. "First, I'm going to finish my smoothie." "Very funny." Then I'm going to my lab and see. I'm going to my lab and see what exactly is missing. You think Rosenthal is behind this? He better not be. Is Mr. Rosenthal here? Nick asked the receptionist.
Mr. Rosenthal asked not to be disturbed,
the receptionist informed him.
Take a seat, Mr. Clegg, and I'll see to it that Mr. Rosenthal knows that you are here as soon as possible.
It's not good enough, Nick explained, getting his headband out of his jacket.
I happen to know that Mr. Rosenthal is on an important business call right now.
Nick put the headband on his head.
But nothing is more important than you. Nothing is more important than you,
Mr. Clegg, the receptionist said. So he won't mind if I walk in on him right now? Nick asked.
Of course not,
the receptionist reassured him. Rosenthal was indeed on the phone when the receptionist barged into his office without knocking. The shock on his face was apparent.
Get off that phone right this minute, Sandro,
the receptionist ordered.
Rosenthal. Mr. Clegg needs to speak with you right now.
Miss Schumacher? Rosenthal gasped. What's the meaning of this? I told you I was not to be disturbed.
That isn't important, the receptionist said. What is important is that Mr. Clegg needs to speak to you.
Rosenthal hung up the phone and got up from his desk. What the hell is going on?
You don't pay me enough, Sandro.
You don't pay me enough, Sandro, the receptionist said.
Have you lost your mind, Miss Schumacher? Rosenthal asked.
I'm taking the rest of the day off, the receptionist said. You can answer your own damn phones.
And with that, she stormed out of the office. What did you have to pay her to make her do that? Rosenthal asked.
Pay, Nick said, tapping his headband.
Nothing. It must have been something you've done.
Hey, what's that thing on your head? Rosenthal said.
I think you know all about it already, Nick said. The next new thing that you couldn't wait to have, so you stole the prototypes right out of my lab.
I didn't steal anything, Rosenthal said.
You had it coming to you. Is that right? Nick asked.
I don't know what you're talking about, Rosenthal said.
So, you don't know anything about stealing elections? Nick asked.
Fixing elections is a crime, Rosenthal said bluntly. You can call me greedy all day long, but you must know I'm not a crook.
Maybe, Nick reluctantly said, not willing to let go of his anger.
I have connections in the government, Rosenthal said quickly. If things are as serious as you say, I know I can... If things are as serious as you say, I know I can make them listen.
And how did you come by these connects? Nick asked.
I might have sold them some patents, Rosenthal admitted.
My patents? Nick said, staring Rosenthal down.
Rosenthal recoiled.
Technically, those patents belong to the company.
Allison was right, Nick said. She said you would never stick to our agreement, that my inventions were only going to be used for commercial applications.
You can sue if you want, Rosenthal challenged him. The company had no choice. The government played the national security card.
And the government paid you handsomely, Nick said, stating a fact and not a question.
I was planning to give you a cut of the proceeds.
I'm not worried about that, Nick said, rubbing the back of his neck.
I'm worried about the inventions being turned into weapons.
This is why I didn't tell you, Nick, Rosenthal explained. I didn't want you to bother with it.
These connections of yours, how can I speak with them?
I'll call them right now if you want, Rosenthal said. The sooner the better. There was an icy cold edge in Nick's voice that had never been there before. He'd always been the fun guy, the guy who laughed at parties, who didn't take life so seriously. He'd always been willing to let some things go and give the benefit of the doubt to others. That's why he believed Rosenthal this time. Nick saw now how his trust had been misplaced and how his eagerness to please him lent him astray. He knew he had to make a stand before it was too late. Rosenthal took a seat at his desk and activated his phone to dial a number. I was given a number to call in case of emergencies. Within minutes, Rosenthal was speaking with an agent of the FBI. Rosenthal switched the phone over to the speaker setting. Agent Gomez, I have Nick Clegg with me in my office, and he's saying that we have a crisis in our hands.
The Nick Clegg? The inventor? Agent Gomez said.
The one and the same. He tells me someone has taken his latest invention from his lab and is using it to steal the election.
The presidential election? Agent Gomez asked.
And how is this invention going to do that?
It can be used to control someone's actions for a short time, Nick said.
Mind control, huh? Agent Gomez said, not ready to believe this.
That's something out of science fiction.
We're talking about Nick Clegg here, Rosenthal reminded the agent. He's developed quite a bit of amazing technology.
But this mind control, huh? How does it do something like that? How does it work?
Do you want a science lesson?
Or do you want someone to stop whoever took the device? Nick said with some frustration. There's no telling how far the people who took it will go once they've mastered the device. Point taken. I won't be able to get you where you are until the end of the day, but I'll have a team sent to your location within the hour, Agent Gomez informed them. I can't wait here. I have to get my lab and devise a way to block the effects of my device. I'm sure Rosenthal has told you where my lab is located. He has, Agent Gomez admitted. I will tell the team to meet you there. Before Nick could get started finding a weakness in his latest invention, he needed to get a handle on what happened in his lab. The first thing he needed was to take stock of the situation and concern for the puppetry devices. When he discovered those prototypes were missing, he blamed Rosenthal and went to confront him, without first getting a good look around and to see what else was taken. Nick never considered that someone other than Rosenthal was behind the theft. Nick turned to the middle of the room where the two large desks were situated. The supercomputer, the size of a small refrigerator, was left running there. This was the nerve center of the lab. The computer monitored the security system, and Nick never would have to leave the lab with the computer powered down so he should... Sensing that something was wrong, the computer wasn't coming out of sleep mode when he approached it. He activated the computer manually and tried to run a diagnostic, but there was no response to his voice commands. Nowadays, most people didn't use a mouse or keyboard to operate their computer. They used a voice recognition. They used voice recognition and massive amounts of artificial intelligence. The written word dramatically changed a generation ago. Business reports nearly wrote themselves, and novelists never battle out of their stories all along. They always had a team of creative digital dynamos picking up the loose ends and finding any factual errors. Oftentimes, books went to a publication with not much more than a cursory glance from the editor. But Nick installed a mouse and keyboard because he believed in the redundancies, and sometimes he even wrote code with them. It was his way of connecting with the past. Looking over the readouts on the screen, he realized whoever was in his lab must have cut some wires that disable the alarm, which was also shorted out the computer's microphones and sensors. Nick reset the system after he replaced a few components from his workshop, and then the computer sensors came back online. With the security grid working again, it had detected a breach just inside the wall near the heavy metal door protecting the lab. Nick didn't design the security system himself, but he made sure it was top of the line. To defeat a system this sophisticated, someone needed to acquire the plans and get the plans. And to get the plans, they would need to break the security of the security company. It takes some skill to do that without raising some red flags. Why would anyone bother unless they knew what he had in his lab? The thieves were good. There is no question about that. But they could have never accessed the higher functions of the computer, which were protected by several layer-level passwords and coded locks of encryptions. They must have thought they could have reverse engineered his invention once they had it without the benefit of the research and plans. The perpetrators might have relied on security blueprints, and if they had, they probably wouldn't have learned about his vault. Nick installed that himself, and that wouldn't be on any of the company plans. The puppetry devices were left out on his work table, but all his other inventions were stored behind a concrete wall on the far side of the room. Various parts and cannibalized electronics and failed inventions were shelved in plastic bins in the front of the vault. Nick walked past the bins and went to the wall and placed his right hand on it. A locking mechanism, independently designed by him, read the biological markers on his hand and the coded chip that had been surgically implanted inside it, and the wall slid open. Inside were a collection of devices that either worked to some degree and they were undergoing some improvements. And were undergoing some improvements or were finished and were waiting an upgrade. Nick thought there was always room for an improvement. Looking around, he saw that nothing appeared to be missing, so he exited the vault and closed the concrete door behind him and went over the computer and brought up the schematic of the puppetry device. He needed to find a way to undo his invention. Studying the schematic for several minutes, he knew he might find something if he had about 30 days, but he couldn't sit in his lab while who knows who is running around with his prototypes. There was very little he could do to undo what he had done. Only he had a workaround. He decided that he could very much safeguard people from his prototypes. Nick went over to his work table and got out a headband from his jacket pocket. Taking a tool from the table, he readjusted the headband. That should do it, he thought. Then he got out some more spare parts and material that he had used to make his puppetry devices and made four new headbands, piecing together parts that he manufactured using his 3D printer. This new model was sleeker and used one-third the parts of the one he kept in his jacket pocket. Sir, three individuals are approaching the lab, the computer said, perfectly calm. Nick programmed the AI with no emotions. The trendy thing was to mask your computer with a bunch of crazy feelings. Honestly, the machines didn't feel anything, and oftentimes the situation wouldn't match its reaction. Like the performance of as an actor that he didn't know his craft. Hector, when you get to the door, ask them if they are from the FBI, Nick said. They all claim to be from the FBI, Hector said. Did they show their IDs? Nick asked. Indeed they did, sir, Hector said. And they appear to be genuine. Open the door, then, Nick said. Hector unlocked the door and quickly swung it open, and one woman and two men stepped inside. The woman looked like she was in charge. She was in her early 30s, and Nick thought she was very attractive in black suit. In a black suit? And even stylish in the cut of her short, dark brown hair. I'm Special Agent Bergsma, the woman said. And this is Special Agent Leonard and Clark, pointing to the other two agents. Leonard could have been a football player, completely bald and with very dark skin. Clark was even taller, with wavy light brown hair and fair skin, like he avoided the sun. Agent Clark was very thin, but he looked as athletic as Agent Leonard. Thanks for responding so soon, Nick said. Are you in command here, Agent Bergsma? I am until Agent Gomez gets here, Agent Bergsma said. What has Agent Gomez told you about the situation, Nick asked. Special Agent Gomez told me you had concerns about the upcoming presidential election regarding one of your inventions. He told me you could explain further, Agent Bergsma said. Are you aware of that remark Jackson Castle made at the rally earlier today? Nick asked. He told a supporter that he wanted to have sex with his wife. We were listening to the story on our own drive over here. On our drive over here, Agent Leonard said.
We were listening to the story on a drive over here,
Agent Leonard said. How does this have to do with your invention, Agent? What does this have to do with your invention? Agent Bergman said. The invention that was taken has the power to temporarily take control of the decision-making functions of someone's mind, Nick said. Simultaneously, it latches onto the right and left frontal lobes, primarily the section of the brain known as the Broca's area that controls speech. Then it overrides the cerebellum and takes control of their actions.
Are you serious? Agent Leonard asked.
Quite, Nick said. Do you want me to demonstrate? Getting his headband out of his pocket. Is this safe? Agent Bergsma said. Very safe, Nick said. My tests show that it enhances brain's function. It has the possibility to be a medical breakthrough. He crowned the headband on his head. And control minds? Agent Clark said. I was planning to remove that feature from the final product, Nick said with a sigh, before anyone found out about it.
I think this whole thing is one big practical joke, Agent Leonard said.
A volunteer? Nick said with a smile. Wait 1 minute. Agent Bergsma said, not quite sure if she should stop him.
I'm fine, Judy, Agent Leonard said. Obviously, this thing doesn't work, and he is wasting our time.
I'm not so sure, Agent Bergsma said. Agent Gomez told me that Mr. Clegg was on the level. Just at that moment, Agent Leonard started dancing about, spinning around and singing.
I'm a little teapot, short and stout.
He put his left hand on his hip.
Here's my handle.
And he stuck his right arm out. His right hand up,
and here is my spout, jumping up and down, and he continued singing. When I get all steamed up, hear me shout.
Finally, he bent over,
tip me over and pull me out.
I don't believe it, Agent Clark said. Andrew, can you hear me? He said, shaking Agent Leonard's shoulder. Are you in there? Agent Leonard didn't pay him any mind and started dancing again.
I'm a very special pot. It's true, spinning around. Here, let me show you what I can do.
That's enough, Mr. Clegg. Agent Bergsma said, walking over to Nick, trying to get his attention. I believe you've made your point.
I can change my handle and my spout. Is this a different version of the song?
Agent Leonard sung,
putting his right hand on his hip. Then he took a knife out and slit his own throat. Tip me over, pull me out. Are you sure, Agent Brinksman? Nick asked. There are two more verses. Two more verses of what? Agent Leonard asked. Andrew, don't you know what just happened to you? Agent Clark asked. Nothing has happened to me, Agent Leonard. I've just been standing here waiting for Mr. Clegg to do something with his invention. You may not remember it, Andrew said. Or Andrew, but you were dancing around and singing a children's song, Agent Bergman said. This could be a nation nightmare. I think like a national nightmare. This could be a nation nightmare. And she turned towards Nick. I was told that you were working on a solution. There is a bright side, Nick said, giving them his reassuring grin. I have the most advanced model. The thieves took the prototypes that are less powerful, and I have blocked any influence the prototypes have over me as long as I'm wearing my headband. What about us? Agent Clark said. That is another bright spot, Nick said, retrieving the new headbands that he recently assembled. I know they're not exactly government issue, but unless you want your strings pulled like you're a marionette, you're going to have to wear them if you want me to go after the people who took the prototypes. He handed each one a headband. I make them more durable and thinner and lighter than the model I'm wearing, but they don't control thoughts, only block. Luckily, we know where to start looking for them, Agent Bergma said. If they want the Republican nominee to look the fool, they'll need to follow him on the campaign trail. She looked over to Nick. What is the range of the prototype? 25 to 30 yards, Nick said. But to be effective, you're going to have to be close enough to see and hear who you're influencing. Jackson Castle is making an appearance in New York City tomorrow, Agent Leonard said. We should be there if we're going to stop these guys. I'm coming with you, Nick said. I don't know about that, Mr. Clegg, Agent Bergsma said. I'm the only one who knows how these devices work, Nick said. And it's because of me that they're out there. I'm responsible. You can come, but only as an advisor, Agent Bergsma said. You are not to try and apprehend these suspects. They can be dangerous. We don't know their endgame. I need to get a couple of things, Nick said. Okay, go home and pack a small bag, Agent Bergsma said. Sure, I'll do that. And say goodbye to my girlfriend, too. But I meant getting a couple of things from my vault, Nick said thoughtfully. They might come in handy. All right, yeah. I'm going to give you... B+.